essentially the way I do it with my family is very relaxed. It seems to be very haphazard, although over a period of time, my kids are all filling in their gaps. But a lot of that's because I do have a strong instinct myself with math.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Live in Math with Julie Brannan, Part 2. Julie Brannan is a former CPA based in San Diego. She's now a full-time homeschooling mom and has a website, www.livinmath.net.
Some of the books that you recommend.
The Number Devil. You know, I don't know of anybody who doesn't like that book. It is fun.
Yeah.
You know, you can hand it to an older child. They'll read it on their own. My oldest son has probably read it 5, 6, 7 times. I don't know. The Math Curse, which is also another one of my absolute favorites. I love the humor in it. To me, a really good math book has wide age range. I can read it aloud, and my 14, 10, 8, and 6-year-old will all sit in and enjoy it. So a book like The Math Curse is like that. You know, some of the math is way over my 6-year-old's head, but she'll sit in because the story is engaging. So they can pick it up and they continue to pick it up and read it and get more out of it over a number of years. That's the type of book, you know, I'd want to own. When you have a list of these kinds of books and you keep your eyes open, I found a lot of these books used on used book lists and at library sales. The Mathematicians Are People Too series is a wonderful series. We've read it twice. I'm going to read it again with my younger kids, go through the whole series. Some of the other favorite math readers, Demi's One Grain of Rice is just, it's a gorgeous picture book. The way the illustrator has presented the story, the visuals, to me, a really good math reader, the illustrations will help you visualize the math that's going on in the story. So that Demi book is really outstanding. It's a beautiful book, it's an enjoyable book, and it communicates the math ideas in the illustrations just as well as, you know, the words. Marilyn Burns has two Brainy Day math books. One's called Spaghetti and Meatballs for All, and the other one's called Amanda Bean's Amazing Dream. And both of those have that same trait in that the illustrations provide you kind of raw material for seeing the mathematics that are in the text. All of the Greg Tang books are wonderful. And again, you can start those with a 4-year-old. You know, you could read some of the youngest levels of those books, and they go all the way up through, say, you know, 10, 11 years old. What's really unique about his books, I think for a lot of parents, he'll have a visual, and he'll write a little riddle. And the riddle helps you learn how to look at the objects and find ways to go from rote counting, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It'll have suggestions to, say, maybe start counting by twos or grouping by threes or grouping by fours. It teaches you mathematical thinking. And so especially, I think, for parents, that this type of thing does not come naturally to, reading those books aloud to your child will teach you how to find ways to think mathematically yourself and engage in mathematical thinking activities with your child. So you might find yourself at the fruit bowl in the kitchen doing the same thing that you were seeing in the Greg Tang books. You know, how can we count this fruit without counting each one individually? Well, if you've got three bananas, you know, three pears and three apples, you know, three threes are nine, and so on. And so it's got that kind of a quality to it, that it's not just teaching to the child, but it's teaching a way of thinking and a way of communicating math to the parent. So those are really outstanding books.
I just took this book out of the library. It's called The Man Who Counted.
Oh, yeah. Oh. It's an older book. I would say you could start reading aloud maybe some of the stories to an 8-year-old, but it's really more like a 10 and up book. But it's delightful. Each chapter is kind of like an episode in his life. And it's not really based on a historical character, but there was one of the fathers of algebra, his name was Omar Khayyam. And so there was a whole period in the history of math where Europe was in decline, you know, and so you had the mathematics that was being developed in Persia and in the Arab world. And so it's kind of based on that period of time where you had Arabs who were discovering the concept of zero. They were reading the old Greek mathematics, and they were discovering things on their own and building on top of the Greek mathematics while Europe was sleeping and going through the plague and all the other things, the wars. And so it's kind of based on that, and it's whimsical. There are very famous math puzzles. But I've actually taken some of the stories out of that book, and we've turned them into algebraic equations and problems. You can actually take a lot of the stories there and translate them into math if you've got a child that's oriented to doing that, or if you yourself oriented to doing that. So, yeah, it's another mathematical thinking book. Very fun.
Your own math group that you work with, is it called the Heart of Mathematics Study Group?
When I first started the E-List, the Living Math Forum List, I wanted to do an adult study based on the Heart of Mathematics book. It never got off the ground. A couple reasons why I think it was a little difficult and ambitious to do that over email. But I think a lot of the families found that the math in the book was a little too high level for them, and they became frustrated with it. So I never continued that. But what that was based on, in the teaching company, they are an organization which produces college-level lecture series. So for adults that want to kind of do continuing education, I like to listen to a lot of them on my own because I can't go back to college right now. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those are conducive to high school level or even below high school level if a child has an interest in deeply studying a topic. There's one series called The Joy of Thinking and the Beauty of Classical Mathematical Ideas. And the two authors, or the two guys who lecture during that series, were the authors of this book. So a lot of families were going back to either purchase, or some libraries will carry that series. And those two guys, again, similar to some of the other things that I read, that was very groundbreaking for me because they would demonstrate math in art and math in nature. And they would actually have props, you know, where they would actually show you Fibonacci numbers in a pine cone, Fibonacci mm-hmm. numbers in a pineapple. And they would actually do the counting and show you with what they had how these Fibonacci numbers flow through nature. And they had very good visuals. And so even my 8-year-old would sit through some of these lectures because they were very interesting. And so that book study never took off, but kind of the offshoot from that was that a number of people have found this other series to learn from, and so it's one of the more recommended resources on the website for, again, kind of finding math in places that you never looked. So that's what that's about. I started out I wanted to do an email class. A lot of people asked me to do an email class. There's a woman out there called Julie Bogart who runs a website called bravewriter.com. And there were some people who had come over from her website where she sends out weekly email lessons. And so I attempted to do this, but one of the frustrating things for the families that were doing it was that they wanted to slow down and take their time with a lot of the activities that I was sending out because I was doing this in tandem with the classes that I was teaching in San Diego. What I did was I just wrote these up as lesson plans that they could download and they could do at their own pace. So right now I have, there's an email list that I've set up for families that want to use the lesson plans. And what they do is they show a family how to integrate the math with the history, with geography, how to integrate math and language. There's a wonderful book called Math Talk. It's Math Poetry in Two Voices by Theoni Pappas. There's a lot of other ways to look at math, and what I've tried to do is match up all those resources around an individual that they would be studying. So it's actually people-based. And so each lesson focuses on an individual, their time in history, things that they discovered, history that was happening around them, language that relates to them, geography, etc.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
What I'm attempting to do, and it's probably going to take me another year or two at least to finish it, but it's to, there are math activities that are tied in here. There's a lot of math actually in the lessons, but what I've had people ask me repeatedly is, is there any way to do a complete math program in a living math way? In other words, if you apply living math, essentially the way I do it with my family is very relaxed. It seems to be very haphazard, although over a period of time, my kids are all filling in their gaps. But a lot of that's because I do have a strong instinct myself with math. You know, I can see they need this before they need that. And they're stumped here because they need to fill in this gap. And I have the ability to kind of off the cuff come up with ideas and games and activities to help them fill their own gaps. But most parents don't have that sense, not as in lack sense, but they don't have that math instinct, I guess you could say, to be able to do that. And so the big thing that I'm attempting to do, I am in the process of doing, is actually going over a set of standards, for example, California's math standards, and map out and show how if you read the readers, if you do these activities, and they may not be in exactly the same order as, say, a state curriculum would be, but let's just say you did this over a course of 2 to 3 years, you will have covered all these standards. In other words, you can relax. You are going to cover it all. It may not be in exactly the same order, and they might spend more time on one idea versus another, but it is a complete diet, you know? And it's kind of like a difference in maybe how some people might approach feeding, you know, their kid. You know, it's like, well, would you have to have a complete meal 3 times a day, or could they eat a protein in the morning and vegetables in the afternoon, you know, and carbohydrates at night, and does it matter, you know, that they get a certain mix on every single meal and it's all sliced and diced up, or can they immerse themselves in one thing for a while and then another and then another and learn in their own way and still be able to cover all of the ideas that would be covered in a standard curriculum. And so that's the project that I have spread out all over my desk that I'm working on. And it's more for out of recognition of the fact that most homeschooling parents are parents who care that their kids come out with a good, you know, math education. Because in our society, you know, a good math education does open a lot of doors. But do they have to gain that education through the blood, sweat, and tears route of, you know, we're going to work through each individual lesson in the Saxon text until we get it, and then we're not going to move on until we get it? You know, that tends to be more of the typical experience. And not everybody feels comfortable, you know, letting go of a curriculum, a scope, and sequence. And it's understandable, you know, given how important math tends to be emphasized today.
I was involved with a group, actually. I started a math group last year, actually, and I had just local homeschoolers come over to my place, and we tried to do interesting activities that were kind of trying. I wanted to just do something that was like exposing the magic of math, like the beauty, the language that we don't usually hear about.
Right.
I found it really difficult to do that because I found that The kids, first of all, they're all different ages. Maybe that was a problem too. I don't know. I seem to be, like, have some kids' interest. Others weren't interested. And I felt, so I ended up not doing it after a while. After, we did it for a year, but then I just kind of, but I still like the idea of working together in a group with other kids too.
You know, the hard thing I found about with co-ops, if the kids, if mom's pushing the kids and the kids don't really want to be there, then they don't want to learn. We're not, you know, we're not here being hired as professional teachers to
that's
do
right.
classroom management activity. And so that's what I love about this year. You know, last year I tried a larger co-op class idea. You know, I'd maybe have a group of 12 kids, and all it took was one or two
yeah.
really not wanting to be there. Mom made them come. That they really detracted from what everybody else was getting out of, you know, the group, and they really drained my energy. I have told, you know, the people that I'm working with, you know, it has to come from your child. I don't want you, your child here because your mom made them
mm-hmm,
to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kids that I have doing algebra with me, there's a one child, he's a fifth grader, actually. He's very gifted, though.
Yes.
And then I've got a 10th grader who he's not as math-oriented, but he's math-motivated. He wants to do Algebra 2 next year. He wants to pass his class. And he did the Living Math group with me last year. He really enjoyed it. And so he and I, we click. And so, you know, we've had kids in and out doing this, but when you have kids that are enthusiastic and enjoy it, there's an energy that you can it feeds you and it feeds the experience of teaching. And one of the hardest things, I think, for some of the people trying to implement some of these ideas even in their own home is that if their kids are resistant to learning, you know, you can change the ideas around, but there may not be a yeast there to activate it. And there was a recent discussion on the Living Math Forum list. A woman was really struggling because she had put together a lot of these ideas in terms of materials and had brought them into her home, but she was a little frustrated that her kids weren't gravitating towards them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she had like a 9 and a 10-year-old. And there was some discussion going back and forth about, first of all, just if you copy what somebody else did, but let's say your kids aren't book-oriented, so just putting the books out may not attract your kids.
Right,
they attract
yeah.
mine. My 6 and my 8-year-old, you know, come to me with stacks of books. You know, they love to read, but it does require me to read to them. And my oldest was a reader from 5, and so I didn't read very much to him aloud because he didn't want to wait for me to read to him.
Mm-hmm,
you know, he could
mm-hmm.
read much faster on his own. But my younger kids, I've had to read aloud a lot in order for it to come alive for them. Some of the women have talked about how maybe they don't like to play games, you know, so it's kind of hard to bring that alive if you can bring the game into the house, but
mm-hmm.
maybe, you know, you might need to play that game with them. I've worked out compromises with my kids. You know, I'll play your game if you'll play mine, and I've managed to weave in games that I really enjoy, so we have a little bit of a balance, you know, so that I don't get burned out, you know,
right.
playing things that I don't want to play. Hey, you know, we're a family. This is a relationship. My kids just discovered a form of double solitaire I taught them last weekend because I felt like, you know, I think maybe they're ready to play this, and we found a way to build a handicap in for my 8-year-old so that the three of us could play it. And it's been the hit, you know, the last few days. It's all they want to do is play this game. I've kind of created a monster. And I let them play, you know, as much as they want. I'm not going to hold them back and say, you've got to quit this in order for us to do that, because this is so much more productive. They're fueling their learning while
yes.
they're playing this game.
It's
I definitely have a passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, my son and I were just, it was just horrible, you know, when he was doing an Abeka workbook, and I was just like, why can't you learn this stuff? And I was so worried, because he loved science, so I knew he would need math.
Yeah.
He's going to become a vet. He's going to have to do physics. He's going to have to do, you know, quite a bit with math. And even now, he has been talking about going into medicine or veterinary school since he was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
His path has not changed in the least. In fact, this year he attended some veterinary science topics lectures at SDSU. He was able to go up there and they let him go, and his interest has been unwavering. And so, you know, I just could see, to me, the last thing I wanted was for my child to turn away from a path that they wanted to pursue because they hated one of the requirements to go in that direction. For me, the passion comes from the fact that I have seen it not only accomplished the objective of him learning math, But it opened up a whole new world to him, to me, to my whole family, that now I'm able to share with my other kids. And so I'm so grateful for those tears and for that difficulty that we went through, because, you know, otherwise I could see us today just kind of working our way through, you know, a math curriculum, because that's what you do, right? I didn't know any better. It was the necessity of trying to find something better that would work for him that created this. I'm passionate for what it has done for us. It has truly opened up a whole new world for us, and I love it. I enjoy it. It not only changed how we even studied math, but how we studied other subjects. So there's kind of this rolling benefit that has just continued to happen with my kids, and the internet's amazing. You know, I can sit down and have a really good reading session with my kids, and I love to write. So, you know, the kids will go to bed at 9 o'clock, and I can sit on my laptop on the couch, and I can just kind of type up some thoughts about, you know, this is what we did. And I can just post that on the website in a matter of minutes, and you can share it with anybody. It doesn't cost anything to really distribute it. And so that's how the website builds. You know, it's kind of like my decompression time after the kids go to bed, write a little bit, put down on the website, and it just keeps growing.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Ain't it great to be crazy? Boom, boom. Ain't it great to be crazy? Giddy and foolish all day long. Boom, boom. Ain't it great to be crazy? A horse and a flea and three blind mice sat on a curbstone shooting down.
Class, Mrs. Fibonacci says,
"You know, you can think of almost everything as a math problem."
On Tuesday, I start having problems. I wake up at 7:15. It takes me 10 minutes to get dressed, 15 minutes to eat my breakfast, and 1 minute to brush my teeth. Suddenly, it's a problem. If my bus leaves at 8, will I make it on time? How many minutes in 1 hour? How many teeth in one mouth? I look in my closet, and the problems get worse. I have one white shirt, three blue shirts, three striped shirts, and that one ugly plaid shirt that my Uncle Zeno sent me.
How many shirts is that all together? How many shirts would I have if I threw away that awful plaid shirt? When will Uncle Zeno quit sending me such ugly shirts?
I'm getting a little worried. Everything seems to be a problem. I take the milk out for my cereal and wonder.
How many quarts in a gallon? How many pints in a quart? How many inches in a foot? How many feet in a yard? How many yards in a neighborhood? How many inches in a pint? How many feet in my shoes?
I don't even bother to take out the cereal. I don't want to know how many flakes in a bowl. Mrs. Fibonacci has obviously put a math curse on me. Everything I look at or think about has become a math problem. There are 24 kids in my class. I just know someone is going to bring cupcakes to share. We sit in four rows with six desks in each row.
What if Mrs. Fibonacci rearranges the desks to make six rows? 8 rows, 3 rows, 2 rows.
I'm about to really lose it when the lunch bell rings. Unfortunately for me, lunch is pizza and apple pie. Each pizza is cut into 8 equal slices. Each pie is cut into 6 equal slices. And you know what that means?
Fractions!
If I want 2 slices of pizza, should I ask for 1/8, 2/8? 2 slices of pizza.
We haven't studied fractions yet, so I take 12 carrot sticks 3 at a time and eat them 2 at a time. In the afternoon, every subject is a problem. Social studies is a geography problem. The Mississippi River is about 4,000 kilometers long. An M&M is about 1 centimeter long. There are 100 centimeters in a meter and 1,000 meters in a kilometer.
Estimate how many M&Ms it would take to measure the length of the Mississippi River. Estimate how many M&Ms would you eat if you had to measure the Mississippi River with M&Ms?
English is a word problem. If mail plus box equals mailbox.
Does lipstick minus stick equal lip? Does tuna fish plus tuna fish equal
forna
fish?
In art, we finally get to relax with a connect the dot picture. Here is my picture. Too bad it turned out to be connect the ancient Mayan numerals picture. Math is just a total problem. Mrs. Fibonacci says,
there are many ways to count.
She asks us to give some examples. Russell counts on his fingers.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Molly says, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. Mrs. Fibonacci says,
I always count 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13. But on the planet Tetra, kids have only 2 fingers on each hand. They count 1, 2, 3, 10. And on the planet Binary, kids have only 1 finger on each hand. They count 1, 10.
We're just about to go home when Rebecca remembers the special birthday cupcakes her mum made. There are 24 kids in the class. Rebecca has 24 cupcakes. So what's the problem? Rebecca wants Mrs. Fibonacci to have a cupcake too. Everyone is going crazy trying to figure out what fraction of a cupcake each person will get. I'm the first to figure out the answer. I raise my hand and tell Mrs. Fibonacci, I'm allergic to cupcakes. I stagger out of school. I'm a math zombie now. I have to find something to break this math curse. I decide to try chocolate. My favorite candy bar is usually 50 cents. But guess what? Today it's on sale for 50% off. I decide to buy licorice instead. I'm now a raving math lunatic. What if this keeps up for a whole year? How many minutes of math madness would that be? What's your problem, says my sister. 365 days times 24 hours times 60 minutes, I snarl. Dinner brings no relief. While passing the mashed potatoes, Mum says, what your father says is false.
Dad helps himself to some potatoes and says, what your mother says is true.
I think about that for a minute. If what Mum says is true, then what Dad says is false. But if what Dad says is false, then what Mum says isn't true. And if what Mum says isn't true, then what Dad says isn't false. But that can't be true because he says that what Mum says is true and she says that what he says is false. Can that be true? I think I'd better go to bed. Then the problems really begin. I dream I'm trapped in a room with no doors and no windows. The room is covered with a lifetime of problems. I have only 1 piece of chalk. How can I get out? I'm about to give up and die when the answer comes to me. Fractions. I break the chalk in half. Then I put the 2 halves together. 1 half plus 1 half equals 1 whole. I put the hole on the wall and jump out. I'm free! I wake up Wednesday morning at 7:15. It takes me 10 minutes to get dressed, 15 minutes to eat my breakfast, and 1 minute to brush my teeth. My bus leaves at 8.
What time will I be ready?
7:41. No problem! I've broken the math curse. I can solve any problem, and life is just great until science class when Mr. Newton says,
you know, you can think of almost everything as a science experiment.
That was Math Curse by John Szczeszka and Lane Smith.
The end!
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.